Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hey everyone, and welcome to All Together, the Family Science Insights podcast, produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I'm your host, Dina Sargent. Let's get started. Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode. Now, family estrangement is a topic that has gained a lot of exposure in the last few years, some as a final straw to the negative communication between family members. Now, I know that I speak a lot about this sometimes on my show about my own personal connection with family estrangement. Today, we're going to be looking at how to manage boundaries between family members. And to help me in this conversation is a scholar of interpersonal and family communication whose research investigates the ways individuals negotiate and manage challenging family conversations. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Jordan Allen to the show. Thank you so much for joining me, Jordan.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Now, I want to know, how did you get into the research on family estrangement to begin with?
Yeah, so it was kind of random. I was in a seminar and we were talking about communication, family communication, and kind of the idea popped into my head, like estrangement is you don't communicate with people. And so why are we talking about that in family communication to begin with? And then the seminar was going on and we were talking about estrangement as like this really negative, dysfunctional thing. And then I just had a moment where I'm like, oh God, I'm estranged from my father, but it doesn't feel negative. It doesn't feel dysfunctional. And then that's kind of where I started generating a lot of the questions that guided my research, which is how do we experience estrangement? And then really what it became was, how is that experience of estrangement contradict sometimes the way that we might talk about it in the popular press or even in research as like inherently dysfunctional or inherently something that needs to be fixed. So it was quite random as far as like ideas go.
No, like I completely agree. I think there's a whole lot of definition changes as to what estrangement really is. And I know that a lot of people see estrangement as like having no communication at all. Yeah. But there are some that also see it as they have relative communication, but just not having direct communication with that person. They have somehow family connection or something, like someone talking in between other people, and that's how they sort of still find out what's going on in each other's lives. Yeah. Not like an indirect, like more like an indirect sort of communication rather than like having a direct estrangement to each other. And I love the fact that we're able to now sort of see so many different aspects of estrangement, and that it's not like a negative estrangement. It's just not having, I mean, there are some that are pretty much a hostile estrangement for like big reasons, but there are some that just don't communicate, or they just don't have any need to communicate in a sense. And I love, like, especially what we're talking about today, I think it's going to be so interesting to sort of look at estrangement as so many different, as a complex thing rather than a fine definition as to what, okay, that means having no communication with someone at all in terms of I don't speak to this person whatsoever. So, no, I'm excited to talk about today's episode.
Great.
Now, what has been some of the most common frustrations that families can face after an estrangement exists between family members?
I think one of the biggest frustrations is, and this came up quite a bit, both in my first study and then I did a subsequent study, was that they made the choice to be estranged, or somebody else made the choice to be estranged from them. And almost every participant that I interviewed brought up was that other people, maybe other family members or friends, would say like really damaging things, like even if they were, some for some people they were kind of strangers. So it would come up like, this person would say, I'm estranged from my dad. And the person that they were talking to would be like, oh, well, you've got to fix that. You only get one dad. Like, you only have one family. Mm-hmm. And that was really damaging to them. And in some cases, it made them try and reestablish a relationship with the person that they've become estranged from, really detrimentally. So ultimately, a few of the participants, even after those moments where they went back and tried to no longer be estranged, it was just like really damaging. And so there's like a lot of messages that people get outside of their relationships or outside of their estranged relationship that tells them you shouldn't be doing this. I think the idea that you have to be intact with your family or in contact and you have to be intimate with your family is one of those kind of cultural messages that we receive all the time. And it can make it really difficult to navigate the fact that you maybe don't want to have a relationship with that family member. Maybe you can't have a relationship with that family member. Or maybe both you and that family member are just better off not being intimate or close with one another. And so I think that's something that pops up a lot, which is unfortunate because, you know, I can't tell all the people in the world, like, stop saying that stuff. But if I had advice, it would definitely, if you know somebody who's estranged, like, refrain definitely from saying that kind of stuff because you don't know people's lived experiences and things like that.
No, exactly. I think there's so much. I mean, one, people give too much advice about anything.
Yeah.
And that also needs to stop, I think, I would say. But there's that whole idea that because you're related to them, you have to be in their life or they have to be in your life. And I, from my own personal experience, is not directly dealing with it, but just sort of observing it as an outside member of the family, seeing two members of my family not leading completely different lives, one trying to constantly reach out and the other sort of cutting that communication down and that just being the normal thing. There's that idea of some people in the family understood that there's always going to be that distance, there's always going to be no communication, but there were some that were trying to fix it constantly and were saying, maybe you should answer the calls, maybe you should answer the Christmas cards that get sent or the letters, and maybe you should invite them to the wedding, for example. And there's that whole idea of because your family, there's a sense that you have to just push aside whatever animosity you felt with them and bring them into your life because, like you said, you only get one dad, you only get one of this. And it's frustrating to see that we're still at that stage where we're needing to do that, or where we're needing to force two people together that literally just do not get along. And especially in the day, the way that we see family now, that somehow we're still not seeing estrangement in the same way. Like, family doesn't have to be blood related. It doesn't have to be people that, it can be people you grew up with. It could be people that you create your own family, but you don't necessarily, you can be estranged from your actual family or for your biological family. So yeah, I'm excited. I'm not going to dive into it too much because I know we've got so many questions to look into it even further. But you know, that's such a great introduction into what we're talking about today and sort of like share a lot of your stories and sharing your own personal story as well. So thank you so much for introducing that into our topic as well for today. Now, before we discuss it even further, I would love to get to know some of your own recommendations and some of your interests as well by playing a little icebreaker that we like to say, get to know the guest.
Okay.
So what is the most recent book that you've read?
Oh, I read the, it's been like a year going. I'm reading this book about night. And so it's like tracking the history, like human behavior at night and like everything from like sleeping to manufacturing. But the only hard part and the reason I'm still working through it is because I do get quite sleepy when I'm reading it. And so I do frequently fall asleep while I'm reading this book about night. So it's been like a long, I'm still moving like 60% the way through, but that is the book that I'm committed to finishing before I start another one.
Oh, the irony of it being called night. No, but it does sound like a really interesting book if it sort of dives into it and you can sort of get really hooked into it to the point where you actually fall asleep. It's good like that. Sometimes it works out really well. At least you're falling asleep to something that is benefiting you in a yeah. way, I will say. Yeah.
I do have to go back and read sometimes like whole chapters because it's yeah. unclear when I started to clunk out. But
but at least you're going back and really understanding it. Yeah. Now, what is a movie that you would recommend to our viewers?
Oh, recommend. I was really, and still am, a big fan of Mrs. Doubtfire with Robin Williams. I watched that so much when I was younger, and the tape broke because it was VHS, and so
yeah.
the tape broke. But I think that's just like a really great movie. I mean, and to talk about like family relationships, the complexity, all of that kind of stuff. I really like Mrs. Doubtfire.
No, I honestly wish that my dad could go for that as for like Halloween for next year. Because every single time I see it, I'm like, I could see my dad doing that. I think I love the way how lighthearted it is, but it still has a really deep message to it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the first introduction into a family that's broken and yeah. in a positive way.
Yeah.
Like it's the very first thing that you saw, like you didn't see them or the parents ended up getting back together or like they just sort of went their own way and they were happier for it. And that was the first view I think a lot of kids and a lot of us saw as divorce being a positive thing, which is really interesting.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think that. I mean, my parents were divorced when I was like very young. I don't really remember them being together. But that was like the movie where I was like, at the end, they didn't get back together. There was obviously like a whole plot of, you know, conflict and things like that. But at the end, everything was okay. Parents are still not together, but mom's okay. Dad's okay. Mm-hmm. The kids are okay. All of it. So yeah, I never dug that deep into it why I loved the movie. But I think, yeah, I think that makes sense.
Well, I'm glad this is also educational for you.
Yeah.
Now, do you have a podcast that you can share with our audience today?
Yeah. So I listened to this podcast. It's called Psychology in Seattle with a clinical psychologist named Dr. Kirk Honda. And it's just phenomenal. And he does such a great job of like talking about psychological theories and then answering questions and like just kind of like talking about and with things that are like relationally relevant to people. He also does reaction videos to like Love is Blind and stuff. And he'll pause the video and he's like, okay, so if I was in the room with him, this is what I would suggest of like a couples counselor. And so I would say, yeah, definitely check out that podcast. It's really powerful. He has some really great episodes.
I love podcasts that are like that, but also sort of do it for like the everyday person rather than just like the academic kind of way of approach to doing it. They sort of do it with an everyday sort of look. So that definitely sounds up my alley. And this is why I love this show. I'm always getting recommended so many good podcasts to listen to that I never get through all of them because there's so many.
Yeah.
Now, who is a person that you find yourself looking up to, either in your professional career or even in your personal life?
Because my career, I don't do a great job of like boundarying it between the personal and professionals, especially with like the area that I study. Mm-hmm. But I had a master's advisor who became my master's advisor, Christina Yoshimura. She's a family communication scholar. But I took one class from her, family communication, like my senior year, so the last year of my undergraduate degree. And I was like doing neuroscience and neuropsychology. And I thought that's what I was going to do. And then I took this class and she just like kind of changed my life. And so then I switched like very, you know, to family communication and mm-hmm. continued my education in that area. And so she was just a phenomenal mentor, just like very attuned. So definitely Christina, I mean, when she and I are still friends now, so.
Oh, wow. It's always nice when you sort of have that person that really changes your whole way of thinking, and especially when it comes to like career advisor and like scholars and academics, people in university, the professors, they're always so amazing at sort of changing the way that you think and bringing you a bit more into what you feel like you're a lot more interested in. No, I love that. And I love that you're still friends with her to this day. I think that's such a great thing.
Yeah. You know, she is just one. I think when you find like a mentor that like sees you as a whole person versus like somebody that works in the research lab or how much researcher producing or something like that. Like when they see you as your whole person and then they help you do what you want, she was really fantastic at that. And so I hope that's something that I can like, I'm working on it, but like emulate for like other people.
No, that sounds incredible. It definitely sounds like you're on the way there. I mean, this show is definitely going to be a lot of help, I hope.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah, I hope so.
Now, I know that everyone has a very different definition as to what family is. And I think we spoke about this a little bit earlier in the show. But what would you say your definition of a family would be?
Yeah, so in communication, we have kind of a different model of I'm not going to bore you with the details, but it's called like the constitutive model of communication, which means that relationships, really kind of everything emerges out of the way that we speak, not just speak, but communicate verbally, non-verbally, historically, in the future, all of that. And so for me, family relationships are those relationships where we're talking like family, where we're behaving like we're family, where we're communicating like we're family. And that doesn't mean that it's always positive, and it doesn't mean that it's always good. But when we see ourselves as family, and so way less restrictive, obviously, than like the biogenetic, you have to be legally or biologically related or something like that. But it definitely like encompasses that as well. So I'd say my definition of family is if you're communicating like family, I would consider you family.
I love that. I've always heard it in a way that says if you have a connection to someone, then that's your family. But I've never really heard it in a way that's a lot more academic than that. And so that's like the first time I've heard that. And it sounds like the best way to describe what a family is. If you're communicating like a family, then you're a family. And that makes it so much more simpler in a way, rather than saying who you have a connection with. It's like, if you feel like you're family, then you're family. I love that it doesn't have to always be positive. Because as we know, family is not positive all the time. There are always going to be people writhing down your neck, just trying to control you a little bit, or like doing different things, that negative communication. But it's still, if you're communicating like a family, then that makes you a family, which I think is always good.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too, because I think even in any relationships, even friendships or anything like that, I just wouldn't want to say that like family relationships are the most important, because we could have friendships, deep, really intimate, like dependent, like interdependent friendships that for a lot of people could be the same as or more important than family relationships. And I don't think it's important that we label those as family to make them important either. So I think like, you know, I'm an equal opportunity relationship researcher. If you think you're family, great. If you're intimate, great.
No, I think that's such a simple way of sort of saying it. If you communicate like that, then you're a family, and then that's it. If you think you're family, then you're family. It doesn't matter blood related or not. And I think that's such a cool way of thinking about it, I think.
I'd like to tell you I came up with it, but I definitely didn't.
we can say that you did.
Yeah, no, let's just start that. It's your show.
So what do you think that the position of a family holds in today's society?
Yeah, so I think that really what we'd come to know as like the family, if you were to picture that without any like kind of complicating factor, so like the mom, the dad, the 2.5 kids, that really didn't start emerging until like the Industrial Revolution, at least in the United States, but more broadly. And so I would say that like the family, as we talk about it today, and is highly political. So like small p political, because I mean, at this point, it doesn't matter like what country you're in, what party you're in, everybody's going to say family. They all have family values, whatever those values might be. And so I think more than like an arrangement of relationships that individuals experience, when we say the word family, it's much more political about what we're talking about. And so it's actually the idea of family is like much more central, which is why I think there's a lot of anxiety when it comes to estrangement. So like I was just Googling around a little bit before our interview today, and the number of headlines that are like, the family is breaking, estrangement is coming out, why are people becoming estranged now when we haven't before, are the same anxieties when divorce became a lot more achievable and easier to do. And so I would say that that's kind of not where family ought to be if we want to have like healthy family relationships at like the center of politics, but inevitably it is, right? And so I'm not sure. Did that answer your question?
Sorry, that definitely did. No,
okay,
that,
good. Okay. Sometimes yeah. I get off on a tangent.
No, the tangents are exactly why we love this show. You can always go off and it still makes sense. Like it 100% fits in. And before we sort of dive into estrangement, I know that some people don't really know what the term family estrangement is. So in the context of family relationships, what would the definition of family estrangement be to you?
Family estrangement, the way that I've defined it is, and it's really come from like how my participants defined it, because I never defined it for my participants. So a lot of times when people conduct research, they will loosely define it and then try and find participants that find that definition. I just asked my participants if they were estranged, and whatever that meant to them. And so for me, my definition of estrangement is that it's a relational identity. It's a relational type, usually marked by less intimate communication, but certainly doesn't have to be like no communication or anything like that. And for me, it's just a way that families can be. It's a family type of relationship that you can inhabit. So not more, it's not better or worse inherently than other types of relationships, but it's a relational identity is the way I would define it.
Okay, so you can still have communication, but just, it's sort of like you tolerate that person rather than you have like a deep familial connection to them in a sense.
Yeah. I think that, you know, that it's like marked by a lack of intimacy, where in families, we usually try to problematically make them as like intimate as possible. But for me, it's just where an individual through also their communication practices is working to decrease intimacy with somebody else. And it doesn't mean that you're not talking to them. It doesn't mean that you don't have to talk about them, because we know that frequently happens. It doesn't even mean that you don't have pictures of them or anything like that still up, but it does mean that you see yourself as more distant from them.
Okay. And so in terms of those relationships and the different family sort of dynamics, what are some of the common emotional challenges that individuals sort of encounter when going through family estrangement?
So I think it can be different if you're the person initiating estrangement versus the person who is being estranged from. Okay. Most of my research is with, not all of it, but is with folks who initiate estrangement. And for some people, there's like a tremendous amount of guilt that comes along with it. So feeling guilty that they don't want to have a relationship with this person anymore, or hearing some of those messages we already touched on. Like you only get one family, or you only get this member, or this type of family once. And I think that for a lot of people, those messages, like those cultural messages, can be so difficult to deal with. They cause like so much guilt. And so for some of my participants, they call estrangement as like a last resort. And so they tried everything that they could, and estrangement was the last option available to them. And those participants really talked like with a tremendous amount of guilt and shame, a lot of shame that they can't carry on the relationship the way other people think that they ought to be able to. But then, mm-hmm. you know, I have other participants who saw this as like ideal. And so they were like very happy that they got to be estranged. Like the moment it occurred to them, like, I don't have to have an intimate relationship with my brother or my mother, and that makes my life easier. It's like ideal. So there's almost like peace and balance that comes from being able to occupy that space. But I wish more people could occupy that space instead of being so overridden with like guilt and shame. Mm-hmm. But those are just some of the emotions that came up from or in my research.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to who chose to sort of distance themselves, is it, which dynamic does that usually occur? Is it most common with children and parents, or the other way around?
You know, I think it depends on, well, it depends on what study you're looking at. Normally right now, so there's a couple of demographic studies that say largely it's children estranging themselves from their parents, but I've seen it also both ways, or parents have had to estrange themselves from children as well. Most family research is conducted on like parent-children relationships, followed by heterosexual marriages. And so there is some more research now about sibling estrangement that's just coming out that I'm excited, excited to read. But most of it is that parent-child. And most of the studies that I've seen, it is the child choosing to be estranged from the parent. But whether that's like the normal or the common, or it's like what the researchers are studying right now, it is a little bit more difficult to say.
Yep. And so the reasons for it, I know that there's so many reasons that they could be estranged. Either they don't get along, or there's some kind of abuse that sort of goes along with that. What are the, in your research at least, are there some of the most common reasons for, and what are the most common reasons that they have gone estranged?
Yeah, so there's like kind of a spectrum on, and I guess if we were to like label that spectrum, it would be the conflict or negativity. So on the really heavy, intense end of conflict and negativity, there is things like child abuse, financial abuse, where there's like mothers taking credit cards out in their children's name, physical, emotional abuse, conflict and dysfunction. And then towards the less dysfunction or the less conflict and negative end of the continuum, there's people who are just like, I can't talk to them. I don't feel safe, or like, I don't feel like they respect my opinion. It's not, it doesn't make me feel like they don't help me grow in any way. And so there's definitely like a spectrum across all of those, where we have a lot of negativity and a lot of conflict. But then there's also people who, it's not that it's the conflict that's driving them away. It's that they just want to live their life in a different way, and they don't want to have to constantly be negotiating this maybe negative, maybe conflictual relationship, but they just feel better in their everyday functioning being estranged from whoever that family member is. So it really, it runs the gamut. But the ones that we hear about the most are definitely like the conflictual and the negative ones, which also is a part of like how people get participants for their research. They'll say, do you have conflict with a family member that you don't talk to? Come on over to the estrangement study. But the consequence of that is that we miss like the second half of that spectrum or of that continuum in terms of like why people become estranged.
And there's just, I think sometimes it's just a natural, they just don't get along, or they just don't really have anything to talk about. Sometimes, so there's not just because there's a negative communication between the two. They could just be, they simply just don't fit into each other's lives, or so it's because the way that I think a lot of the media and a lot of the places that I've seen, at least when they talk about estrangement, it's one against the other, or it's someone doesn't like the other person, or it's someone that they don't, they have a lot of conflict with, or a lot of like recovery from abuse kind of thing, whether it's mental abuse or physical abuse. There's so many different stories, but like you said, we don't really hear about, they just don't fit the person that they want them to be, or they just don't fit the way that their life is going. So I've never heard of it being as simple as that, as just the two of them not getting along.
Yeah. I had one participant say something along the lines of, we can just love each other better estranged. And I don't, I mean, like, obviously I didn't interview the person she was estranged from, because that's a tricky part about estrangement research. But from her perspective, she could love her, I think it was her mother, better if they were estranged. So, like, she could accept who her mother was and kind of radical love acceptance only if they weren't intimate with one another. And so it wasn't a matter of, like, I hate this person, I don't want to be in contact with them, with this person. But it was, if I accept her for who she is, she's also not somebody who I can be really close with. And I don't know how common that is. She didn't have a lot of guilt. She didn't really have a lot of guilt associated with you have one mother or you have one family member, anything like that. But she was definitely had made sense of it in a way she was more at peace with, and it made sense to her. So that was kind of a beautiful, that interview was really nice.
Yeah, no, it sounds interesting. She sounds like, it almost sounds like she's the anomaly in a lot of the research, that she's the one that sort of counters that you don't have to have a relationship just because she's your parent, or you don't have to find a way for it to work out. Sometimes it's just, I mean, like you said, there's only one-sided interview, so you only saw her side. But from what the way that she describes it, it does sort of, you could sort of almost assume that it was kind of mutual in a sense that, that I'm not going to assume that it was, because sometimes you never know, like you said, especially with research. But I did want to ask, when it comes to the way that the culture sort of goes ahead, and whether there is a difference in your research when it comes to the culture aspect to it, whether there's a Western culture or whatever other culture sort of exists, is it more common in the Western culture of the world, or is it just as common in other cultures that you've sort of seen?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, because I think the one thing to keep in mind about family is that it's intensely cultural. So how we experience family in the United States is going to be related but different than in Australia or in China or Bosnia. And so I think family estrangement, particularly in places where the family unit is so closely guarded, that we receive messages all the time that this is how a family should be. Estrangement becomes a lot more dangerous in those places. And dangerous, I mean, like, in terms of like meaning. So what if, in the United States, what if we said, oh, you don't have to have a relationship with your parents if you don't want to? A lot of things start to crumble for us culturally really, really quickly. So in terms of it being more common, that I do not know. But in terms of like estrangement having existed most places for a very long time, we know that it has, that like being closer or more distant from a family member has existed, as far as we can tell, like through all of family or human relationships. But what is significantly different is how we frame the negativity of that distance. And I would say that now, culturally, in Western cultures in particular, that it's way more frowned upon and shamed on than it has been before, because of how family has become like so central. And not just any family, right? It has to be that heterosexual parent, 2.5 kids, everybody's happy and most intimate with who they should be. That in terms of like culture, makes estrangement, even when it is a really good idea, very shamed and very frowned upon. So I don't have like numbers for you in terms of like where it is, but the idea that family members are more or less intimate is like an incredibly common like thing that we've seen across history.
Yeah, because especially like on my family, because I've got two completely different cultures. I've got an Asian culture that deals with family. They don't deal with arguments. They put everything under the rug and no arguments ever dealt with. And then I've got the Western side of the family that if they have an argument or they have a fight with another family member, they are happily not able to speak between them. They won't even go to social events if they're in the same area together. So there's two completely different cultural aspects that I've sort of grown up seeing, that the one side don't really talk about anything, any animosity that they have with the other person, and they just sort of go to social events, say hi, pretend all fake niceties and go on with their lives. But I'm always wondering if that's a positive or a negative, like especially being in, like seeing that culture from the outside, because I'm so glad that I got to see both sides from the outside perspective, because I'm always wondering which side seems like it's a better thing, whether you sort of sweep everything under the rug and don't really say how you feel. But growing up in the Western world, it's so easy to sort of speak your mind, especially growing up, going as an adult now, like I'm 20, almost 26 now. And there's that whole idea of I can finally have some say as to how my life is run. But it also means that if my parents do disagree, I don't have to take their opinion into account. So there is that change of, okay, I don't have to respect them just because they're my parents, or I don't have to share my everything with them just because they're parents, or just because. So especially when talking about the societal context of family estrangement, there's, I'm pretty sure there must be some sort of challenges that sort of face a lot of when it comes to culture, when it comes to the amount of respect that you're supposed to show. Because respect, as I think it's respect in like Asian culture, for example, at least what I've seen is you can't not talk to them. You can't, because they're your elder, if they're your parents, then you have to respect them. It just comes with the territory. But Western society is so different that I've noticed is that you don't have to respect them just because they're your parents. You have to earn respect rather than just give it and just deal with it, deal with however you feel. Like there's such a difference in between of how we communicate as well and whether you want to communicate or not. So that's why I always love estrangement. It's such an interesting facet because when it comes to family relationships, the whole culture aspect really kicks in.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, we talk about culture like it's tied to ethnicity or nationality. And then we also talk about culture as like a family culture. And so a family culture, you might exist within like an Eastern or an Asian culture, but then you also have like your unique family relationships as well. And I don't know if it's, you know, I don't know if it's useful or productive to say this one is right or this one is wrong. But when we're looking at individuals within both of them, how are they able to get their needs met? And in what ways are they able to get their needs met? And I think that if we're looking at it from like a communication perspective, being really aware that those cultural rules absolutely exist and absolutely guide how we are able to interact with one another and get our needs as family members met. Because I think that you're 100% right that, like, especially when we're talking about estrangement, largely the estrangement research is conducted on white Euro ethnic descendants. You know, most of the time also college students, because that's who a lot of people can like get to be
easily. Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But absolutely, I think it's complicated. And if anybody is ever saying that family relationships aren't complicated, I call them communication charlatans. Because then they just really don't know what the hell they're talking about. There is nothing not complicated about human relationships.
No, that you. I think they definitely need to take a course in communication and see how that goes.
Yeah. Anything.
So when it comes to estrangement, if they're sort of facing, if they're the person that's facing being estranged, so they're not instigating it, but they're sort of dealing with estranged, what advice would you have for family members who want to sort of try to get in contact with them again? Because I know there's always going to be that if it's one-sided, then they're always going to try to want communication. But if someone's really not wanting to, is there a way that they can sort of do it without seeming like they're forcing themselves onto them?
Yeah, so I would say before even kind of broaching the idea of making contact with that other person who's made it clear directly or indirectly that they don't want to have contact or less communication would be to one, have some self-compassion, because that's not like an easy place to be where somebody's saying, I just would be better not around you. Like that has to have like a lot that comes with a lot, can come with a lot of like pain and hurt. And so first to have that. And then the second to kind of interrogate why they want the relationship with this individual. Because I think there's a lot of people that will pursue having relationships because they should have relationships, not because necessarily they want to or they're getting something from that relationship. And so kind of interrogating and reflecting on what that looks like for them and why they want to be continually reaching out to somebody who doesn't want to reach out to them can give them a lot more insight. So maybe at the end of the day, there is some really solid reasons that they want to be in contact again with this person. Mm-hmm. But now you know what those are. Mm-hmm. And then, I mean, like all of this is kind of one-sided, right? But, and then like reflect on your contribution to the way that the relationship is. Like nobody just cuts off, even if it feels that way, right? Sometimes I think it can be quite startling to people to be estranged from, but nobody cuts off relationships just for the kicks of it, you know, like just because it sounded good on a Tuesday that I'm going to do that. And mm-hmm. so really reflecting on like what your contributions to that relational dynamic are incredibly important. Mm-hmm.
So it's less of looking at them as someone you're in a family with, and more so looking at them as a person saying, do I want to pursue a relationship with them? So it's less like seeing them, oh, it's my child. I'm supposed to know what's going on in my child's life. And more so seeing them as, okay, it's this person with this kind of values who does this. Do I want to keep having a communication with them?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And then like, what can this bring us? Or, you know, and not that all relationships have to, I don't like the cost benefit. That feels gross to me. Like we're weighing it, but, yeah. But really thinking carefully about why you want to have the relationship, and then thinking carefully about what you're willing to accept, like what you're willing to change, because inviting somebody back into a relationship that looks the same or you made no changes is not going to be fruitful for anybody.
Yeah, I think that's such a big one, because I think so many people are, they're just really wanting to rush back into a relationship with that person because they're supposed, like you said, they're supposed to have a relationship with them, but without really seeing, okay, what do I benefit? Have I changed enough? Like, especially if they're the ones that sort of did the hurt or hurt the other person, then there's a lot of like unlearning of the way that they say, for example, it's a parent and a child, and the child's cut communication off for a reason that there's a lot of negative connotations with this person, with the parent. I think there's a lot of unlearning that the parent would have to do for the child to sort of want to be in a relationship with them again, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. Like a lot of acceptance, I think, because nobody wants to, there's very few parents that I think want to be like, yes, I hurt you in this very particular way, and I'm sorry, and here's how I'm going to make adjustments. Because I think parents also feel a lot of guilt and shame related to how maybe their relationship with their child has played out. And one reaction of that is to like reject that, you know, reject the child's hurt or minimize their pain, or the classic, you know, like, I can't do anything right, or I was a fine, you know, like all of that is true, but you can't really see somebody else's pain or help them with it until you kind of work through it on your own pain on your own. And like confronting that. And I would say that that is like the growth space to be. So, you know, kind of losing the idea, this is the relationship and this is what it's going to look like, which is highly control oriented. And few people respond well to that. Mm-hmm. And more thinking about how can we grow? How can I grow? So that even if I don't have a relationship with them anymore, that I'm still taking care of myself.
Yeah, no, that there is a huge difference between wanting to actually change and actually like doing it just to have a relationship with them, and not, and maybe like fake changing in a way, like sort of like not really learning from it. And I mean, vice versa as well. I think there's a lot of unlearning that the child would have to do as to how they will sort of react to their parent as well. So the unlearning on a lot of sides, I think there's a lot of like healing. Like you can't just really jump back into relationship with them almost immediately. There's a lot of like, okay, I have to see how your both sort of dynamics are going to be, which is, it for me, like, it doesn't sound sad because it sounds like a normal thing, that because I grew up sort of seeing that and observing that, so it doesn't seem like a sad situation. But I know to a lot of people that seems like a very, like a waste of a relationship, which is very, it's very interesting to sort of see them, a lot of people explain it that way. But I did want to know, when it comes to preventative measures that a lot of family members can take to sort of like not make it the last resort to become an estrangement, what do you think that each family member can really do to sort of have a positive relationship with each other?
I would say to see the other people in your life, whether they're family members or friends, for who they are and not who we want them to be. Because when we, you know, we see, let's just say like our mothers, and we have this idea of what a mother should be, like caregiving and makes you dinner, or I don't know, any of that nonsense, right? Any of the June Cleaver nonsense that we're not really thinking about, but that's definitely like knocking around in our heads, that like when we have those images, we don't get to seeing who our family members really are. And if we want to know how we can negotiate our relationships with them, if we want to know how we can have the best relationship with them, we really have to start seeing them for who they are and not who we think that they should be. And then sometimes estrangements still happen, but, you know, it's like less sneaky that way for sure. But the hardest thing, I think, is to definitely see somebody for who they are instead of who we wish they were, who we want them to be. Because those who we wish you were are so damaging to the other person. They're so damaging to ourselves. And we slide into that very easily because we get all of these messages, you know, from books or media or television or, I mean, you name it. And our brains are constantly computing those things. And they're telling us, well, your mom should be doing this. She doesn't do this. She doesn't love you, or she's a bad mom. And like all of those things are going around and our brains are constantly doing this calculus about what we can expect from other people. And as we're growing, it just makes it incredibly difficult to see our closest family members for who they are instead of who we want them to be. And so I think that that would be a decent question. Like, do you see your family member for who they are? Like all of the things that are annoying and grate you about them, all the things maybe you don't even like, in addition to all of the things that bring you joy and closeness with them. So I think like untangling those things could be really helpful. And I don't know if we ever ask people frequently to untangle those things for themselves. Mm-hmm.
I think that's such a great example that you said, because you always hear about the parent's expectation for a child, but never a child's expectation for a parent. Like, especially when you see a mother, for example, being the caregiver, being the one who looks after the kids, being the one who is constantly seeing the children and being in the children's life constantly. But then you see the dad as someone who's a protector, and suddenly they're not there to protect you, or they're not there to really be a role model as to how other people in your family should be. There's that view of like, okay, you did have expectations that you didn't even realize you had on the other person, which is so interesting. So that's a big question that like not even I have really even thought about when it comes to a child's expectation on a parent. And sort of changing that image from taking it away from being a mother to being, okay, just the person that they are. And like you said, it does get harder as the child becomes an adult as well, and sort of seeing, oh, you didn't do this for me, so why should I have a relationship with you? But there's that whole other thing, but like the child probably has to ask, did I really see them for them, or did I see them for what I saw everyone, the whole idea of what being a mom is supposed to be?
Absolutely. And there's I briefly had like a Zen Buddhist practice. I didn't get kicked out. I just did not get invited back, but that's okay. There's a concept in Buddhism called dukkha, which is like pain, distress that comes from like clinging. And it's a very particular kind, which is clinging to ideas, clinging so tightly to the way that we think things ought to be. And there's so much pain that comes from clinging to the idea of what we think family should be. Yeah. That if we were to let go of that a little bit, we'd still have pain that comes from conflict, or we might have pain that comes from being hurt by somebody or something like that. But at least the pain that comes from like holding on to what we're told family should be is less. And then like with that gets like less guilt and less shame about the way that we are. I think, well, hopefully that lines up with what you were saying. That's what popped into my mind.
No, it really did, like aligning what reality is and what expectations are of reality that actually doesn't exist.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, it works really well. Like if you think about it, that's probably the best sort of, as close to like the spiritual understanding as you could possibly get when it comes to expectation versus reality. And I think, especially this day and age, we sort of see a lot of the expectations that we used to have on ourselves and the reality that we see on ourselves. So there's, to bring that into what we're talking about today is such a big thing. It's such a huge eye-opener for me, if thinking about it, when I hear about my expectations on my parents and my expectations on what my sister is supposed to be and a whole lot of family relationships and how they're supposed to look. But knowing that, I mean, both my parents are divorced now, and so there's all everything's sort of splitting up now, which sort of becomes a whole little definition in itself, and like our family dynamic changes. And so there's a whole lot of understanding as to what the new reality is supposed to look like. And now the expectations are sort of gone, are sort of changing how our reality actually is. So it's a really interesting concept. Like I honestly can get so wrapped up in this in itself. But no, I do want to go on and sort of look into what your practice and some of your habits that you do yourself and some of the habits that you would recommend as well. Now, what is your recommended practice to sort of cope with family estrangement other than the ones that you've mentioned a little earlier?
What are the things that I keep in mind? And I got this from a few of my participants, actually, is to really confront the idea that you're broken, that because your parents are divorced or you're estranged from your father, this idea that there's something wrong with you or there's something broken, and to really confront that harshly, because there's nothing broken. You're fine. And I think that people get really bogged down. And one participant, her quote is like at the top of my mind, like every day, is she said, "I'm not broken. Just because I don't talk to my dad doesn't mean that there's something wrong with me." And I think that that is something to keep telling yourself and reminding yourself, and then telling other people that there is no such thing as like a broken family. That doesn't exist. The beauty of human relationships is that we have been able to attach, detach, rearrange ourselves to get our needs met. And there's nothing broken about getting your needs met by non-biological family. And so I think in terms of like from a communication perspective, messages to be aware of and to confront when you hear them is this idea that you're broken, because no, you're not broken. You know, there's like, there's nothing to fix inherently. This is just a different way of being. And if you want to be different, then work on being different. If you're happy with the way that it is, then continue on being the way that you are. But regardless, you're not broken.
Wow, that quote was actually such a deep one. Like it's the whole idea of being broken is like shattered glass and torn a thousand different pieces. But the reality is there's so much that you're, so much pieces can be, like you said, everything can be rearranged. Like if you're sort of not friends with a friend anymore, it's not, you're not broken from them. You're not broken because of them. You're just simply detached from them, and they're not part of the story anymore. They're not part of the life that you're trying to build for yourself. That doesn't mean that you're shattered, you're broken because of them. It's just that you're okay or better off without them, or there's a reason that they're no longer in your life. And it's such a deep. I'm trying to sort of find words to say other than that it's such a deep quote, but it really does hit hard when it comes to the reality of what society sort of sees being estranged from families, especially the current society. It's, for me, it's still baffling to the fact that that's our view on estranged families, that that's our view on divorced families, is the fact that, oh, you must be so sad. I'm like, I'm really not. Like, it was actually a really good thing. Even my parents, who are still good friends even after they've split up, they're both happier for it, or they're both pretty much better communicators than they used to be when they were together. And the idea that, oh, you don't have a full family anymore. I'm like, I still have all family members. I still have family in my life. It's not that I don't. It's the fact that it's just a different structure than it used to be. So it's funny, that idea, whenever they say that I don't know how you function. I could never imagine my parents divorced. I'm like, that good for you that they aren't. But mine are fine exactly the way that they are. Actually, they're happier the way that they are, because they're both being themselves in a way that they're comfortable being themselves. And the amount of the comments that I got when people found out that that was the case, it was so interesting, because it was so dynamic. Like, some were like, okay, it must be easier house to live in now, because it was definitely, it was a scary house to live in when I was growing up. But now it's like, it's smoothed out a whole lot more because both sides are being themselves in the way that they can be. And it's so much clearer as to like what happiness is actually defined as. So it's a really interesting, really interesting thing. Like happiness is not defined as I'm constrained to this person forever and we're gonna have fights along the way. I'm like, fighting to that extent, I've realized now, is not normal. So there's that.
I mean, so there is, I'll tell you this story. So it was like a number of years ago, I went out on a date with this guy and he found out my parents had divorced. He's like, oh, well, just so you know, like, it's not gonna work. I don't date people whose parents have been divorced. And I'm like, okay. And then I dug a little deeper and his parents had never been divorced. But that being said, they had cheated on one another and there was like a tremendous amount of infidelity. And like the further into this conversation with this man I got, I was like, oh, just because your parents are married doesn't mean you have like a better grasp on anything. Just because your parents are married does not mean that you grew up in a healthy household at all. And it was kind of like, it boggled the mind how he was going to judge me for my parents being divorced, but then not ever like reflect on his own parental role and clearly what the, how that had shaped him in his adult life.
Oh.
So, you know, random story, but like just because you come from a family with no divorce does not mean that you're inherently better at the world than anybody else.
That being said, that is like the perfect thing. I think it's such a funny thing when I sort of say it now, like my parents are split up, because it seems so normal to me now. When I was younger, it seemed like I used to hear a lot of my friends' parents get divorced. But when it happened to me, I was like, they're happier by themselves. They are both happier when they're able to laugh with each other now. Like they're not arguing about so many different things. And it's such a fascinating thing to see them as a different dynamic than what it used to be growing up. And that dynamic works for us and it works for so many other people. So I will say exactly what she said, just because your parents are still together doesn't mean you're happy.
And what a gift, because it is really, you know, such a gift for parents to give their kids to take care of themselves as individuals, to interact with, and sometimes that means divorcing, but it's like a real gift to give to people so that they can see there's a lot of different ways that relationships can work and be happy and healthy. And it's not that you just have to be crammed together for the rest of your life. That can be extremely damaging in and of itself.
Exactly. And I want to go into the open mic section of the show now. And this is the final section of the show. This shares some of your own things that you're passionate about, something that you want to share with our audience. It doesn't have to be related to our topic at all. It can be something that it can be connected to the topic if you sort of find something that we didn't really speak about. But in the last minute or so, I'd love to give you the floor and just share what's on your mind today.
Yeah, thank you so much. So, kind of, well, very much in line with what we're talking about today, a colleague and I started a podcast of varying audio quality. God bless. We're older millennials. We're doing our best. But it's called Communication Crackdown. And really, in the podcast, we talk about things in personal and professional lives and really try and break down like misconceptions about communication and how damaging those can be. And so if family estrangement is interesting to public speaking, work-life balance, all of that kind of stuff, we have some episodes up on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Patreon, YouTube, Communication Crackdown. Yeah, that's us.
Perfect. Well, I'm making a note of that because that sounds pretty much up my alley, I will say.
I would be so honored if you listened.
I will definitely come on and listen to it. I think I love listening to things about communication, especially like doing this show, I think has really inquired my thirst for knowledge a whole lot more than I think it ever used to. Just sort of dealing with the different ways that people communicate and the different ways that communication really fits in with everyday life. Like you hear communication. Oh, you have to be, communication is key. I'm like, but why?
But what does that mean?
Exactly. So yeah, I'm definitely going to make a note of that. And I'm going to add that to my list of podcasts to listen to. Cause I love episodes like that. I love shows like that. So I'm definitely going to do that. And to know that I was on, you were a guest on the show is amazing. So I can't wait to listen to it. Now, if there's a way that audience members would like to get to know, see some more of your work or to see some things that that you want to share, is there a way that audiences can sort of connect to some of your work?
Yeah, so most of my research is published on ResearchGate. Okay. And so if you're interested, I mean, like, on anything ranging from like estrangement to twin relationships to step family relate, all of that, you can just put my, it's researchgate.com, and you can find a lot of scholars, myself included, and kind of get to read their work that they'll upload and things like that. So if you wanted to do that, or you could also email me at, okay, can perfect. I say it?
Yeah, you can say that.
Okay, or email me.
No, that's perfect. I'll definitely leave the link down below for everyone to access it very easily. I think this is exactly what the show is here for. It's here to sort of promote not only the topic, but also the researchers behind the topic. And I think this is such a great way of doing it. So yeah, it was actually amazing having you on the show.
Thank you.
And to talk about this, especially seeing not only the scientific side, but also the sort of the personal understanding. And I mean, I always love guests that I can sort of go back and forth with. It makes it so much easier. And I actually had a lot of fun talking about it, especially this topic, because it always fascinates me. So thank you so much, Jordan, for coming onto the show.
Thank you for having me. I had a great time. Thank you so much.
And yeah, if anyone wants to know more of some of Jordan's work, definitely head down to the link below, or maybe we can find your email there as well. So definitely go and send her an email if you have any questions. I hope you guys enjoyed the show as much as I did, and I'll see you all in the next episode. You've been listening to All Together, the Family Science Insights podcast, produced by the Family Science Labs, a division of LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. More episodes are available from 10 life management perspectives and can be found by searching LMSL on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and other podcasting apps available on your devices. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating our show, sharing it, and subscribing to our channel, as it helps other people find it so that we can grow and bring you more quality resources. More of our work can be found on our website at fa.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Dina Sargent. Thanks for tuning in.